This is Julio Rodriguez, and this is the Lookout Landing Podcast.
Welcome back to the Lookout Landing Podcast. Today we are doing another episode of Why I'm a Mariners Fan. My name is Matthew Robertson, staff writer and podcaster here at lookoutlanding.com. And I'm very excited to be joined by today's guest. He is a writer, an editor, a Banner Society member, a Washington State Cougar, and just a general man about the internet. It is Brian Floyd. Brian, how the heck are you, man?
Doing well. I've been not chasing, actually, you can't walk. Holding an infant most of the day, so this is actually a nice break.
Oh, wow. I have not been doing anything even remotely similar to that. I feel like you've really earned this little bit of fun while I've just been, you know, dicking around all day.
I've locked myself in a quiet place, and I have no screaming baby for just a few minutes, and it's perfect.
I have also done that, although the baby was never really a concern on my end, but I've quarantined myself from my adult roommate in order to make content for everyone.
Perfect.
Yeah, so thank you for taking the time to stop agonizing over Wazoo's defensive struggles or whatever it is you normally do during football season to talk to a different team that probably makes you equally sad and confused. So the people who have heard other episodes of this kind of know what we're doing, where I'm just trying to get to the bottom of why people became a Mariners fan, but I think more importantly, why they've stuck around despite everything that's sort of happened on and off the field with this team. So I'd love to just start kind of with the beginning, with your origin story. Like, where are you from? How did you become aware of the Mariners? What made you kind of drawn to them in the first place?
So I think I have an origin story that's probably pretty common for a lot of people that grew up around here that are around my age. I'm mid-30s. And it's, you know, you're kind of ingrained with it when it's from childhood, between Griffey in the late 80s and then into those teams. And, you know, what really kind of hardened the fandom, I guess, was the 90s and the Refuse to Lose Mariners, and the runs that they made there are, you know, the most success in the playoffs and probably the most excitement we can point to. And then, you know, also happened to save the team and things like that. So for me, like, it's a fairly typical Mariners story where I was a fan of the team basically since birth and growing up. And it really took hold in my teens in the 90s and then into 2001. And then kind of, you know, from there, it's been interesting. But like, in terms of a fan, I used to be, Old Kingdom games were like a treat you'd go to once in a while. And then I also spent a lot of time at the Tigers and then the Rainiers, but down in Tacoma, AAA games were kind of the entry point for Mariners and especially for some of the younger players for me.
Got it. So were you, like, are you from a baseball family? Were your parents, or if you have any siblings, were they into baseball, or was this something you kind of found on your own?
So for me, it was, my grandparents were retired on my dad's side, and they used to go down to Arizona every year. They would go see spring training in Peoria. And I think I kind of like picked it up through osmosis at some point. And I honestly don't remember where. I do remember like watching and listening to games, but it was one of those things where it just kind of, you grow up in Seattle and it's basically ever present and you realize it's there. And especially when I grew up, like, it's hard not to be a fan when the team has Ken Griffey Jr. and, you know, for a time Ken Griffey Jr. and Senior and players like Randy Johnson and all that. So it was, you know, really at that time, and I think especially in Seattle sports, it was kind of, the Seahawks were really bad for quite a period there, and the Sonics and Mariners were like the thing when I was growing up.
Yeah, I feel like baseball is, of the major sports, it's probably the easiest to be like coerced into just because it's so present for like the entire summer. Like, it's very easy to sort of accidentally kind of like watch a few innings of the Mariners or hear it on the radio or like just end up at a game in a way that's much different than other sports. Like, you would never like accidentally just kind of like luck, like last minute decide, oh, I'm gonna go to a Seahawks game. But with the Mariners, like, they're that team that people who don't even really care about sports will go to the game, and that can kind of lead to the snowball effect of like, oh, that was fun, let me learn more about the players and the sport and all that in a way that feels very specific to just baseball.
Yeah, and it's one of those things too. I remember growing up where like it was, once in a while you could maybe get pulled out of school and go to an afternoon game, or even with some of the bigger games, they would be on the radio in the corner of the classroom because I'm old and that's we didn't have the internet and all that kind of stuff. But it was like the Mariners were always kind of looming in the Northwest, it seemed like, especially in the 90s and early 2000s, where you just kind of had to pick it up because it was always there and it was fun too at the same time. So, yeah.
Totally. I mean, I have a similar origin story, just a little later. Like the late 90s, early 2000s was like my pretty early childhood, and one of the first memories I have of like being at a big Mariners game, and sadly one of the only memories I have of being at like a big important Mariners game, was 2000 ALDS. My dad pulled me out of school to watch them play the White Sox, and that was the game that ended on the Carlos Guillen bunt. And it's kind of a bummer in a weird way because I don't really remember it. Like, I wish I had more of a connection to that game other than just seeing and hearing about it and vaguely remembering like being there. Like, I wish my memories were a little more concrete of the Mariners being good because it feels very mythical. Like, Ken Griffey Jr. is literally like a mythical creature to me because I was so young. Same with, A-Rod and Randy Johnson. But like, Edgar became the guy who I'm kind of like, I grew up with, and then Ichiro was the one who sort of carried it. Through my like, I guess mid childhood or whatever you'd want to call it, but that beginning part is so like kind of overwhelming because like you said, the Mariners were so big. It's a lot like what I would imagine kids growing up in Washington now are dealing with the Seahawks, where it's like if you don't like them or don't know what you're talking about or at least able to hold your own in a conversation, people are gonna kind of side eye you. Like, what planet is this kid from? That's definitely what I remember about being like 5, 6, 7 years old supporting the Mariners.
Yeah, no, I totally agree with that. And it was like that in, the mid-90s, and especially when they were, well, I guess, when they started, when they actually had their best years when they needed to. It just consumes everything. And you see, for me, it's kind of weird because I went to graduated high school in 2003 and then went to college. And, even though it was still in the state, it wasn't in Seattle. And you, when I left, it was still Mariners quite a bit. And they'd obviously had the 116 wins and all that kind of stuff. And then over time, you could see the city kind of shift to Seahawks, and to the point where I had moved away across country and come back, and the Seahawks had won the title and all that in between. And it was just like it's all consumed Seahawks like the Mariners were 20 years before. And it was really interesting to see.
Yeah, and the sad part is now that it's become actually generational, like there's a whole entire generation of people who don't remember the Mariners ever being relevant. And that's where I think you get into the like tricky sort of institutional problem of like if a whole generation of people were like sort of conditioned to not care or think that they're irrelevant, then what is that going to mean for their kids or like the people that they hang out with? Like, I don't obviously think the Mariners are going to die or anything, but like the slow trickle, like you said, from Mariners to Seahawks has been pretty fascinating to watch in a way that I don't necessarily like.
Yeah, it's been really weird to see. And I was thinking about this related to something else today, actually. We were talking about the NCAA football game, and my question was kind of, at what point do you forget? Like, where is the line where a kid comes up and he's a freshman and he no longer knows the game because he didn't play it growing up? And I think that's the same thing with the Mariners, where it's like, okay, you don't know a successful Mariners if you haven't followed the team almost for like 20 years now. You've seen some bits of success, and like it's an interesting thing to wonder how you rebuild that and what it takes to kind of repair a gap that, you can't kind of fix organically, I guess.
Yeah, I think about that a lot with the Sonics too. Like, they're now, like the generational thing comes up again. Like, we're getting close to actual, kids that are near high school and having no memories at all of the Sonics being here. And like, it's weird. I realized pretty recently, and this isn't like a big realization. Like, I'm not trying to act like this is profound or anything, but like, all Sonics gear now is throwback gear, which is really sad to realize. Like, I have stuff that I remember wearing as like a modern fit, and then people are like, "Oh my God, like so cool, so retro." Like, no, this wasn't even that long ago, but it's become such a like relic because of how much time has elapsed. And with the Mariners, like, there is sort of that weird like hipstery thing now where it's like if you really, really like the Mariners and kind of like, prioritize them over the Seahawks, you're like that sort of contrarian on purpose sort of Seattle sports fan.
I feel like I have an immense amount of respect for that if you're serious about it, though, because you look at someone who is like into the Mariners fan, into the Mariners, and following him closely, following every game, and it's like you are dedicated. Like, that's not an easy thing to do, and it becomes harder as the team gets worse to keep coming back. And that's where I kind of like with the question, with the overall podcast question, where like it did cause that existential crisis for a minute for me, because I was like, you're right. Why do we like these sports teams that just are not good? And I don't really know. Like, it's one of those things where, you know, it's easy to bandwagon the Seahawks. It's not easy to just jump on board with the Mariners and try to be a big time fan, especially right now.
Right, and this has come up in the past episodes for sure. Like, it's sports is so specific in this way where like it's if the returns aren't providing you happiness, like why are you still involved in it? Like any other thing, literally anything else in life, if you were to tell someone like, yeah, I do this every year, you know, I used to really like it, but now it's been making me very sad or very angry or very existential for 18 years now, people would just tell you to stop doing it. But there's that weird like sort of guilt almost when it comes to sports. And I'm sure like it's a little different for college sports, obviously, because that's more a part of your life. But I'm sure like Wazoo fandom and Mariner fandom are kind of cousins in a way, right? Where it's like
Ooh,
you kind of
yeah.
have that thing in the back of your head where you're like, I know this probably isn't going to go well, but I'm still excited every time the season rolls around.
It's really weird, and it's an interesting thing going from like Seattle sports to Washington State, because it's a great, like, you know, Washington fans have good success on the field and are fairly consistent, other than some dark times in the mid 2000s. But like, you really don't see sustained and expected success with the Mariners now. And you know, in some ways, Wazoo, they do well. They're struggling a little bit this year, but like, it's hard to kind of stick with it when it's just you never you have that feeling in the pit of your stomach that you're always going to like come around the corner and get run over by a bus as a fan of these teams, where like the success is not guaranteed. And you know, I think if you were to tell me in 2001 that, okay, well, here's how the next 18 years are going to play out for a Mariners fan, I'd just laugh at you, right? And then, you know, now you're sitting here like, wait, what? How did we go from there to here? And, you know, how did we go from essentially like fairly consistent 6 years to just nothing?
Right. This is the part where it always gets kind of therapeutic because you're like trying to remember that the happiness that was attached to it can come from other things, and like you deserve to be happy in ways that aren't necessarily dependent on the results of a sports team, you know? But it's so inherent once you have a taste of it, like you have the 01 Mariners or you have a Wazoo Rose Bowl team or whatever, and now you're like, I kind of have that memory tucked away where you're like, oh, I remember that feeling, I would like it again, but realizing that you can sort of circumvent it and find other ways to kind of replicate it without having the actual on-field success is such a tough thing to navigate because it's all any of us want. Like, that's sort of the shittiness about sports is it's pretty binary. Like you either win or you lose, and that either results in happiness or sadness. So for the last 18 years, you know, Mariner fans have been trying to find like little things to hold on to, especially when it felt like we were going to get there with Cano and Cruz, and then that kind of fell apart, and now it's really just a completely different team. Like that one felt like almost like they were, I don't know, like it was edging a little bit where you're like, you're so close, but I can't actually finish.
This is like something we think about a lot in college football too, because there's a hundred and something teams or whatever, and only one's going to win every year. And most of the time, like if you're looking at data and stuff like that and how rosters are built, like there's only a few teams that are legitimately contenders every year, and you can pretty much spot them from the beginning. And so how do you, as a fan of one of these other teams, define your own success every year, every game, whatever else, is an interesting thing that we always wrestle with in college football, but also in a lot of these other sports where you're like, yeah, we're just going to be bad this year. So what do I care about? And sometimes it's like, win a game. If you're talking about a football team, just one. That's all we care about, right? And like, that's success. Or my biggest measure of success, usually in my like fan mantra, is I don't really care if my teams are good or bad as long as they're not boring. And so like, I'll take a bad team that'll take me on a roller coaster ride for 3 hours or 4 hours a night or whatever else. Or a good team that does that. But like, if you have a just a meh, boring fan experience, it's a lot harder to actually care. And then I think the other part to that too that you mentioned is like, it's the side quest. So it's like, okay, well, I want Felix Hernandez to do well, so I'm gonna root for that. Or I want, you know, to see improvement from this player, so I'm gonna root for that. And you really just start making almost a checklist as a fan of like things that you're looking for, and you're kind of just playing fantasy baseball, football, basketball, whatever, with yourself, with no stakes. And that's kind of a fun way that I look at fandom and try to keep my interest in things that, you know, maybe they're just going to be sad and we know the result will be sad, but there's ways to find like interesting or happiness in them.
Right. Yeah, I had the idea for this entire podcast series like during the 2019 Mariner season where you kind of mentioned this idea, but like they were bad by design. It was very clear from the beginning of spring training even that they were gonna suck. So then you have to sort of grapple with like a whole season of caring while not caring too much because that'll only lead you to a dark place. So I'm curious, like where are you with the Mariners right now? Like after they sort of tore the whole roster down. What did that do for you as a fan? Were you invested this year? Were you kind of like taking a year off? Because I feel like that's totally a normal thing to do when you look at this year's team and probably next year's team too. It's an easy time to kind of check out.
It's kind of like taking a gap year. And like, it's not something where I fully check out. The only time that I ever really kind of was forced to fully check out was living on the East Coast. And that was mostly because it was incredibly hard to like follow. So, you know, when games are starting at 10:10 and you're trying to follow them, like, it's almost impossible to follow the team. But at least here, when they're bad, I can kind of, you can pay attention, you can pick it up when they get on kind of a roll and follow along for a while, or you can just kind of like show up to a game if you need cheap entertainment at this point, and do what you need to there. But like, my fandom is fairly low and apathetic, which I think is fairly normal around here around the Mariners right now, just because you can only do so much when like the team fully admits, and rightfully, that they're just gonna be bad. And I appreciate that they set the expectation, because like, yeah, you know, I understand what we're looking at and can kind of pop in and out, but I also like, it's not the best time to invest, you know, the limited amount of time we already have into just like hardcore following all the time.
Yeah, and I think this was a big year too for Mariner fans trying to find that checklist that you talked about where it's like obviously the wins aren't going to be there, so what do you care about? And you know, this year was a lot of player development, which can also be kind of a frustrating thing to follow because as we know, especially in baseball, as we know, it's hardly ever linear. Like your guy can have one really good game and then 10 terrible ones, and if they're a pitcher, then you know, that's even worse because it makes their numbers look awful. So, I mean, I had to do that as well because I was never really a minor league guy. I'm still not a minor league guy at all. I just don't have really the time or frankly the interest in minor league baseball, but it's kind of something you had to do because like that's the whole sort of direction of this team now is preparing for Jared Kelenic and Julio Rodriguez and Logan Gilbert and guys who, you know, 4 or 5 years ago, like I would have known their names, like whatever the equivalent of them were 4 or 5 years ago. But this year I was actually like trying to find clips and you know, thank you to Kate Prusser, who runs Lookout Landing, who does a great job of sort of getting fans excited about the minor leagues because that was really the only option. Like, it's so devastating to turn on a Mariners game knowing there's 100 more, seeing where they are in the standings, seeing that they're losing, and then the thing that you mentioned, the horribleness of kind of realizing that they're boring. Like, at least when the prospects come up, they're going to be probably very green, very, probably just flat out bad in some respects at the beginning, but that's going to do a lot, I think, to revitalize people's interest in the team is having just the beacon of hope. And it's not just we have 9 32-year-olds who are playing out the string. It's now we have 9 24-year-olds who are actually building towards something like what the Cubs have done recently or the Astros or something like that.
And that's also the fun thing in sports too, even when the team's bad. Like, the one thing that we can always kind of cling to is hope and potential, even if you haven't seen the player or, you know, any of that kind of stuff. It's like, this was always the thing in football where the backup quarterback's always the most popular person on campus because there's always potential there. And the Mariners are like the living embodiment of that in a lot of ways right now, where it's just an iceberg. You see the team up top, but like, the actual excitement and, you know, to your point, like, if you're really following the team, it's actually all below the surface. Most of it is right now. And it's a little bit harder to follow, but you can also, you know, I remember when the Mariners were trying to build out some of those really good teams, you do get to kind of be the hipster where you're like, okay, I saw this person, you know, before they were big, or I saw this person in Tacoma, or, you know, I was following this person and know who they are. As long as it actually does pan out and you're not just following prospects for, oh, I don't know, 17, 18 years,
Thank you.
It's good, but like this is the time at least where you can look at how they're doing and you can rationally convince yourself in a good way that like, okay, here's this potential, and you start to kind of paint in your head what 3, 4 years from now looks like, and like, at least now that can give you some hope for a while. Now, if it's not realized after a certain period, it's going to get real frustrating. But like, I like that being able to just kind of look at a player and realize, okay, they're going to develop into something we think, and like, this is the potential that we're working with, and it could be really cool to see.
Right. Do you have like a favorite Mariner prospect right now? Are you following the minor leagues at all and like trying to get excited about that? Or are you pretty detached from all things 19-year-old baseball?
I wish that I had the time to, and I don't, so I just like parachute and pay attention to things. But like, that's the hardest thing about like going from, now that it's like parenting and doing all this other stuff, where I'm like, it's really hard to follow along, not just the games at the major league level, but then like everything going on at the surface. And so I usually just end up parachuting in right now and paying attention, or also just like checking in when rosters expand toward the end of the season and stuff like that. But I just don't have enough time. I wish I did.
Don't we all? Yeah, that's a, I really have a lot of respect and admiration for people who can like follow the Mariners and all six of their minor league teams at the same time. I don't really understand how anyone has the brain capacity for that, to be quite honest.
No, and it's fun to watch players come up though, and I think that especially as a lot of them start to pan out and they get closer to Seattle and distance too, it gets a lot easier. Like the fun thing for me is I live down closer to Tacoma, and it's probably easier for me to just go watch a game down there and be more entertained for cheaper at the moment than it is to go into Seattle, go to a Mariners game, no idea if you're actually going to get entertained, like that kind of thing. Minor league baseball and the expectations that it sets are probably a good analogy for Mariners fandom right now. You're kind of rooting to see a good game, and the results kind of don't matter, and you just want to see some individual performances.
Yeah, we had a kind of that problem just amongst Lookout Landing was like trying to figure out who's actually going to watch this game and recap it. Like, 'cause we had to, we had to subject ourselves to some pretty bad experiences, but like I had the whole range. Like, I remember there was, games where it was 10 nothing by the third inning, the Mariners were down. And then I had one game where I cleared a whole Friday night. I was like, guys, I can take the recap. It's fine. And then Mike Leake took a perfect game into the ninth inning. I was like, this is just the most 2019 Mariners experience we could have had, because even like the good things didn't really last. Like, Mike Leake didn't throw the perfect game. They didn't continue on the 13-2 start and all that. It was just like the rug getting pulled under your feet all the time. And
So you had to write about a bunch of these games, and I remember doing this with Washington State too during the Paul Wolf years when it was bad. So what was your most memorable recap that you did about a bad game? Like, good games are good, but sometimes the most creative things that you do or the most interesting things you see are just when you're stuck following a bad team and you have to come up with something despite, it being 10-0 after 2 innings.
exactly. Yeah, that was the whole year. I mean, there was two that I remember sort of specifically. One of them is kind of recency bias, because it was, I think, the second to last game of the year. The Mariners were playing the A's and they lost 1-0. It was a game that went by in like 2 hours, thankfully, so it wasn't like the, slog of a 9 to 8, 5 hour game. But the A's have this guy named Mark Canna. Are you familiar with him? Okay, so I decided to just write the recap from the angle of it being a poem by him, because he has like a very sort of like poemy kind of vibe. Like, he's a white dude with like enormous sideburns who went to Berkeley, and like he does this thing that the reason why I started to kind of like sports hate him is because whenever they're here, like in Seattle, he'll wear like a full like ski suit. Like, he wears, I think it's like a balaclava is the actual term for it, but he wraps his entire body as if it's 30 degrees outside and it's maybe like 55 with a light breeze, and he acts like it's Siberia. So I just had this whole image in my head of him being like kind of insufferable and like would be the kind of guy who would write poetry. So I did that for like a just a full recap, because the Mariners didn't do anything of note in that game. So I just like had him sort of tell the story of the game from his like waspy angle on it, which was pretty fun. The worst one in terms of a blowout was there was a game in like probably July or August in Anaheim where Trout and Ohtani and someone else, probably Cole Calhoun, hit back-to-back-to-back home runs off Kikuchi, and it was just like, oh my god, this is a little too on the nose maybe of like the Japanese player that we landed getting kind of rocked by the one that we missed out on, and then Mike Trout, who just pretty much exists to make the Mariners' life hell. Like, that one was another one that just stands out from I have to actually like sit here and, you know, kind of like glue my eyes open so I wouldn't fall asleep or check out, because it's so hard, I think, to watch the boring blowout. Like, that's easily the worst brand of game in any sport, and having to do it over and over again. Like, the ones that are memorable are the ones where you have Shohei Ohtani or some like actual player with a narrative attached to them doing things.
It's not just hard to watch too, but like you said, it's hard to write about, where it's like, okay, I got to come up with something to say about these teams that I just keep seeing getting blown out every night, basically, which can be, you know, terrible, but can also be fun in the ways that you mentioned, where it's like, okay, I'm going to write about poetry here, or we started writing fiction about Washington State games because the reality was just not good. And so we would write complete fiction stories that weren't about football at all, but were about walking through forests or things like that. So, like, that's the part where, at least, you know, and this is blending from fan to, like, have to pay attention and cover the team, where it can at least get fun, and you have to, like, challenge yourself to find the interesting in the bad. And, you know, if you can't find that, then it gets, like, then you start really questioning what you're doing.
Exactly. And the thing that makes it hard for baseball, at least from my perspective, is the fact that you're playing the same team multiple nights in a row. So, like, you know, they kick your teeth in on Friday and you're like, oh, Saturday, sometimes even a better pitcher is throwing. And then Sunday they have this other guy who's good. And it's like, this is mostly just describing like the Astros or the Yankees or the really good teams. But those are the ones where it's like, I would love to just not pay attention to baseball at all for the next 3 days, because I know that nothing positive is going to happen. And I guess you don't really have that with football, especially where it's just one a week, and it, you know, you lose to a team, you don't see him again until next year. But with baseball, they literally can come back 12 hours later and do the same thing again.
It's like you wake up and you're like, do we really have to do this again the next day?
Especially with the division teams, they seem like they never go away, and it's infuriating now that the Astros and the A's are two of the better teams, because it seems like we play them 90 times a year.
This is also this is the spot where we want to take a season ticket holder and be like, that goes to every game. And be like, how do you do this? Like, how do you go to a game one day and get your teeth kicked in and then come back the next day and you're like, all right, let's do this again, and do that for 81 games a year.
Yeah, I'm certainly too cynical, I think, to do that. But I mean, I've talked to a lot of those people when I'm at the stadium. Mm-hmm. I mean, my dad has he does the classic share season tickets with five of his friends or whatever. So sometimes he'll just throw me the tickets, and I end up sitting next to another guy who has, you know, who's there every single game, and he just has such a different outlook on the sport as I do. Like, he has the way to sort of laugh at the badness that I don't really have. Like, I'll get more sad or just start to, you know, not pay attention. That's when I'll go to the team store or go get another beer or whatever. But he'll just sit there and kind of you know, have an anecdote about, oh, he swung at that same pitch on Thursday night, ha ha ha. And it's like, dude, I like how you're trying to reframe this, but I don't want to watch someone swing at a pitch in the dirt over and over again. Like, how, I think people, especially who maybe aren't online as much, have such a more pure outlook on the world that I'm struggling to find, where it's like, I don't want to subject myself to badness. You know, it's the just log off theory.
Right.
Like, if it's so bad, just stop paying attention. But these season ticket holders, they're in it, man. They're the real heroes, I think, of the 2010 Mariners as a decade.
It's incredible. Like, I have the utmost respect for people that do that, even though I'm like, well, it's more like a wisdom thing. I'm like, all right, if you can find the pleasure in this bad every game, and you're just like, I'm happy to be at a ballpark and watching baseball, that's great. Like, you found baseball peace.
What was your peak as a Mariners fan? Not in terms of you know, the team was the best, but when you had the most investment in it and we're getting sort of the most out of it. I'm sure it's the team, the years when the team is successful, but is there a specific moment or an era maybe, or a player even, who you really remember as your guy who, you know, caused the Mariner fandom to really spring?
That, I mean, for me, it was those 90s teams, and it was Griffey, and it was I remember going through A-Rod coming up and the betrayal of A-Rod leaving and people calling him Payrod and throwing money and all that. And there was just such a and same thing with like, you know, and not leaving, but Randy Johnson and all the just cast of characters that were in the 90s, it's a thing I think that the Mariners are trying to replicate now by like, okay, get to know the players, they're your friends, but like when the team was good and clicking and you had all of these players that were, you know, either great in terms of on the field or big personalities, like it just creates a connection with the team. So for me, it took hold. You know, my peak Mariners fandom was probably still the double and seeing, you know, the refuse to lose Mariners and the comebacks there in the mid 90s. And, you know, I think that's the thing that still sticks with me, and it still sticks with me that the rest of the things around the game. So it was for me growing up, it was Dave Niehaus, and it was the radio calls, and it was just kind of the whole world of the Mariners there. And it's different, I think, now, like you had mentioned, you know, everything being so online, but like at the time there, it was you did listen to the radio, and you listened to, you know, it was a lot slower burn, and you weren't always, it wasn't always baseball, 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 but you would just tune into a game and go with it. So yeah, I guess my peak is probably in my teen or early teens, early, you know, ages as the Mariners were also good. It was just perfect timing for like a kid my age in Seattle. And really the dumb, stupid, cliche answer is Griffey. It's being around in that era when he was coming up at the age he was and where I was, you know, as a kid, and I got to see his whole career here and all that, like that's the thing that really takes hold, and it was a really special thing to watch that entire time. He was the player that, you know, like we talked now, you need to find something that kind of to latch onto or that's going to entertain you no matter what. Like Griffey would deliver there. He may be crashing into a wall and making a highlight reel catch or getting hurt doing that or hitting home runs, but like you would go to a game and Griffey was your must see. He was always going to do something, and that was special.
Yeah, and I think the fear is that we're not going to have that player again. Like, that is such a huge force, is having like a singular presence like Ken Griffey, who's nationally famous, which is also another thing that's not really a thing anymore with baseball players. Like, I mean, it's been talked about to death, but like Mike Trout can just blend in at any gas station in America. And you wonder, like, what's it going to take for the Mariners to like re-spark that feeling of like, oh, this is our guy. He's going to bring people to the stadium. He's going to make the Mariners relevant on a national level. And like the hope is that it's, you know, either Julio Rodriguez or Jared Kelenic, or I guess there's a chance that we get some big free agent that comes right around the time that the rebuild is starting to take shape. But I think, like, obviously we have a similar parallel, I think, with Russell Wilson, where he's the one who's going to get a bunch of kids into the Seahawks and into football the same way that Griffey did with baseball. But I would love to sort of have the Mariners thing come full circle, because my peak was, I mean, it's really the, I guess you'd call it the Cano era. That's when I was watching the Mariners the most, 2014 to 2018. And it's pretty amazing that they never even got like dumb luck one time. Like, you would think that eventually they would have like the thing that the Seahawks or the Sounders have. Like, when I was watching those games this weekend, the Sounders win the MLS Cup and the Seahawks beat the 49ers. It's like you realize how many things have to go right to win a game. Like, the Seahawks benefit from the missed field goal, and you know, the Sounders scored their first goal on an own goal. And you're like, why don't the Mariners ever have just one of these moments? Like, I think it's funny that one of the bigger memories for a lot of fans, one of the like cherished ones in recent years, was game 161 in 2016, where the Mariners are playing the A's at home. They just need to win to have a chance to stay in the playoff race. And it's like a back and forth game, really similar to that Seahawks 49ers game from Monday night. But the Mariners lose that game. Like, that's the thing that kind of remains funny to me about all that, is it's like such a memory. Nelson Cruz hits like an amazing home run, like storybook kind of stuff. And then the Mariners end up losing, but it's still like this really defining moment of an entire era, I think. Like, how you have sort of the unbridled joy of like, oh my God, we're gonna make it, you know, Nelson Cruz is amazing, to, you know, an hour later the game is over and the season is over.
I feel like we probably burnt, this reminds me of like the late season stuff. We probably burnt all our karma on the one game playoff with Luis Soho hitting the ball under bench in the 90s. Like
Oh yeah.
that was probably the generational thing where we used up every single ounce of magic, and we're still paying for it now. And like, so you're talking about, you know, why don't things break right? And I actually saw him break right in a one game playoff, and before the one game playoffs like were a real thing. And it is a generational difference now where you're like, man, you don't expect anything to go right. But I also, I got to see it go right once, and it was incredible.
Well, then you also have to start wondering how much that'll affect the players. Like, you think about not only guys who have been with the Mariners for their whole career, but also people who have grown up following baseball. Like, now the people who are in the big leagues also are having a tough time remembering when the Mariners were good. And you have to wonder, like, it's like getting drafted by, the Browns, as sad as it is to say. Like, if you don't have sort of any, like, frame of reference for this team being good, you feel like it'd be almost natural to kind of fall into like this defeatist mentality of like, oh shit, I'm on the Mariners, like really? And I'm sure that, a lot of professional athletes are professional athletes because they don't think like that, but you have to, like, it crosses their mind, you would imagine.
Yeah, no, it's like a, it's a. It's a t the stunning realization for me this year, and it wasn't like it's not a revelation or anything, but when the Nats won, it was like, well, not only they made the World Series and won, I was like, it reminds you that the Mariners are still over here, and now they're over here alone, and they've been over here alone, forever at this point. Or not forever, but they're sitting here without even a World Series appearance. They haven't even lucked into one, and you're like, is this just a cursed franchise at this point, right? Like, and it's not one of those things where you actually believe it's a curse thing or whatever else, but you do wonder if the bad luck snowballs, like you said, and you're just stuck in a cycle of bad, and if it's ever going to get better. And, honestly, I have no idea what causes it either. It's like things went so well, and then everything just fell apart and has never gotten better. And, the amount of bad it takes to be bad for this long without even lucking into something seems, really demoralizing.
Absolutely. And I was going to ask you about the Nats thing. Glad you brought that up. Like, seeing, not only I think seeing the Nats do it as the only other team who had never been to the World Series, but doing it as like a severe underdog, did that like inspire hope in you, or was it the other way where you kind of resent them for now like taking away the shared thing that we had, where it's now they're that person who is on the same level as you who then like has a glow up and you have to like wonder, am I supposed to be happy for them or do I kind of hate them now?
So I'm happy for him, but that's also a personal thing because I lived there for a couple of years and would go to games once in a while, and like it was just a, it's cool to see that. But also, like to your point, it's tough. It was at first I was like, oh man, the Mariners are like stuck and they haven't been to the World Series, and that's half. But also I'm like, look man, if they can do it, like fine, there is hope for everyone to be able to like, put it together and get to that point. So it was more hope for me, and it's also cool to see someone new win. It's cool to see an underdog win, and like it does, you get the feeling at some point, the Mariners will break through. Like there's just got to be odds that happens, and it just makes it sweeter. When you do finally get that success, and especially for the people, at least I've seen some Mariners success in my lifetime, but for people that have, are 16, 15, like grown up now, and if they get into it, like that's the thing that can just spark, everything. So I think it's cool for the Nats, and it's cool to see like how the city there rallies around it. And I think that that's also like a thing that Seattle fans can take hope in too. I mean, we saw it with the Seahawks too, and as well. So like it can happen, and it's one of those things that when it does, it's really cool to see. It was cool to see everyone rooting for the Nationals. I was rooting for the Nationals just as the underdog, and that's something where you should be happy for them. Like, it's cool, and sure, the Mariners are alone now, but at some point, it's got to work, right?
Yeah, I mean, I feel the same way. I was definitely inspired, and it was hard not to start to daydream about what that would look like in Seattle eventually. But there was, I mean, also part of me that was that kind of got mad about it because it just reminded you that the Mariners haven't been able to be lucky. Like, I know that, luck is probably a dumb thing to be chasing. Like, you would obviously rather just be talented than lucky, but the Nats did have some like, pretty just wild, like hard to explain stuff that we see basically every October in baseball. Like something that isn't, technically supposed to happen does happen. And it's truly baffling that none of those things have gone the Mariners' way. Like, even with the good fortune that they've had, like, getting Robinson Cano and Nelson Cruz, that, we never ever got high profile free agents. Or like, oh, we developed James Paxton, he looks pretty good, he throws a no hitter, and then he's gone. Like, it's always like, we have one thing and then it's immediately canceled out by three other bad things. And I'm just, there's no way to really quantify it or explain it, but you are like, you know, starting to beat your head against the wall wondering when will it be us.
You wonder too, like you see the Nats when you the thing that I go to now is like, well, how far away are the Mariners? Like, baseball is not usually an overnight, you know, you pop up and great. And the Mariners have obviously, for good reason at this point, like, burned it to the ground, taken it down to the studs, and like, we're going to rebuild. And you just look at, you know, the World Series and Nats, and you're like, how far are the Mariners from that? How much is it going to take to get there? And that's the part that can get kind of like, the doubt creeps in, and where you're like, oh geez, that's going to be, you know, a long road to get there. But yeah, I don't, it's a really hard spot to be in.
That's true. Baseball rebuilds are so time consuming, and it's very, I mean, it's a dark thought for sure, but it is pretty harrowing to think like, okay, even if, you know, this current prospect wave does come up, like if they bust or whatever word you want to use, if they don't meet expectations, then you have to start all over again and find a whole new wave of prospects. And that takes like 5 years normally. So it's like you put so much stock into your like prospect core. And we saw it with like the Ackley, Montero, Justin Smoke group. Like that didn't work at all. And you see, like, we're still kind of recovering from that in a way. So you really just have to know what you're doing, I guess, is the big takeaway. Like, you should obviously have prospects that you feel good about, but also like know that it's not always going to go according to plan, and you would kind of need a backup, I would hope. Like, I don't want the Mariners to do the thing where it's like, we're not going to chase any free agents or make any trades because these are our guys. Like, well, what if your guys aren't actually what they're made out to be? Then you should have gone after some of these free agents just to like fill out the roster. Or like, kind of, you see it in other sports more where it's like, you know, I think of the Sixers signing J.J. Redick. It's kind of a specific example, but like at some point you need like an adult in the room or like a veteran to help with your rebuild and like kind of get it over the hump. You can't do it all with, you know, five rookies basically. Like, you're going to want someone who knows what they're doing, who has the big game experience. And that's why I'm kind of interested to see how the Mariners approach free agency these next couple of years, because you would think that if they are actually trying to compete with these young kids, that they're going to need, you know, the fourth starter or, you know, a Howie Kendrick type, like, utility pinch hitter who can actually do things in big moments. So that's something that I've definitely thought about, and I'm wondering what the Mariners' plan is beyond just have prospects be good in future, you know?
This is why it's so complicated, too, especially with baseball. And, you know, you make the analogy to any other sports you can, like, and this is where the drafting comes in too. You, as an organization in baseball, like, yeah, you get a bunch of shots in the draft and all that, but like, you're going to draft these players, they're going to disappear, and you're going to hope that they develop. And development is always, you know, it's partially a science, but it's also a big roll of dice whether someone develops over a couple of years. And there isn't that, like, you can turn over a roster in football and be good the next year. You can turn over a roster in basketball and be good, or assemble a super team over a summer and be good. Baseball, you have to have a lot of faith in a lot of people in the organization who have hands and eyes on all these players as they go, that it's going to work out. And then you also have to do at the same time, and I think this is the point that you brought up here, is like the tough part of doing this is like, they're going to have to temperature gauge how these things are coming each year, and then also figure out how to fill in the rest of the roster, both short and long term. And, you know, it's an interesting thing to see the balance where, like, you need to have a somewhat – this past year, you need to have a – you need to field a team. That's basically the goal, just have a baseball team. But you're also worried about development, getting some of these players, these young players, like, big league time, and – also not blocking them with people at their positions and being able to, like, you know, fill them in with success. And that's a tough job. So there's so many variables that have to go right for it to work with things as bad as they are, that you really have to have a lot of faith that, you know, you have the right pieces in place organizationally to end up creating this team, this vision that comes to fruition in 3-4 years. Because like you said, if you don't, you're going to start all over again, and now you wasted, what, a decade probably?
So, yeah, here's a question for you then. Do you trust the Mariners to actually do this? Like, does anything that they've shown, like, lead you to believe that they can actually do all the things that they're talking about?
I appreciate that they have finally been like, we are declaring bankruptcy, and they're just like, you know, I think that it was long overdue where you can, in any sport, like be a middling team and you're just stuck there. Like you're bad, you're not playoff good, but you're also not like moving anywhere and you're just kind of stuck in neutral or downhill. And so actually having a management group and ownership that's like, we are declaring baseball bankruptcy is refreshing in some ways. And also like coming out and saying, we have this plan, this is what we are going to do, and being very clear and specific about it is something I appreciate. So like that gives me some hope instead of just trying to blow sunshine and we're going to compete for a title this year. I think that it's actually good that they're finally like, yeah, we're bad and we're going to be bad, but this is the plan. These are the things to pay attention to. And if the team is in what we're seeing, like starts to match eyeballs, like that gives you some hope and at least some faith in management. But like, there's not a ton to go on right now other than I think the move of saying we're so bad that we have to just burn it down and we're going to be fully transparent about it with fans that we're just going to be awful, is a good start.
Yeah, I agree. My only real concern in terms of like personnel and logistics is just this is a personal opinion. I really don't trust Scott Servais all that much. Like when you think of the good Mariners teams, you have Lou Piniella, who like, I don't know what he was like as a baseball guy, like what his chops were in terms of, decision making and all that. Like I was a kid, I wasn't really agonizing over his lineup construction or whatever. But the thing about Lou Piniella, obviously, was that he was just so fiery and he would inspire confidence and passion. And I'm just not totally sure that Scott Servais inspires much of anything. And obviously, I'm not there. I could be wrong, but I don't know. I feel like when you look at a lot of these baseball teams too that have gone from, worst to first, or have at least had, like even the Nationals, like Davey Martinez was like a very specific type of manager who like seems like he really struck a chord with his players. And like I said, maybe Scott Servais is doing that, but just his very like calm sort of aw shucks demeanor to me as a fan isn't really doing a whole lot for me. And I don't know, you don't have to like weigh in or talk shit about Scott Servais, but just while we're on the topic, that was something that I was just thinking about as I've watched him manage this team now for like 5 years or whatever it is.
So, like, a question back to you though is, does it matter right now if, like, if you know you're going to be bad this past year and this coming year and probably the year after that, maybe, like, do you want to use your Lou Piniella type manager to try to ride that out or squeeze whatever out of that, or do you let the fine Scott Servais, like, to just, you're a manager, you're here, you are kind of guiding the team through this rough patch, but we have no expectations they're going to be bad. Like, and if the Mariners have a plan and they're talking about lining up in certain years, do you let him ride it out for now and then bring in a newer manager to kind of change the culture towards the end? Or do you just kind of roll with it?
Well, yeah, it matters in the way of like if they do want Scott Servais to be the manager who brings the Mariners back to the playoffs, like then he has to start building those relationships, I think, more than anything else. Because, I mean, with baseball, like it's you're playing 162 games. Like, obviously, you wouldn't want a micromanager in terms of like baseball decisions, but you want someone who like you can sort of, I don't know, like vibe with, for lack of a better term. Or like if you're a young player who's like, supposed to be part of the next, good team, you're going to want to have a manager who you think can get you there. So I think that's the part that matters, is if, you're Justin Dunn's, you're Justus Sheffield's, the people who are supposed to be part of the next good Mariners team, if they are meshing with Scott Servais, then I think everything is great. If they're, starting to think like, oh, look at these other managers, look at the way they do things, like, wouldn't it be nice to have one of these, like, 40-year-old ex-players like a Craig Counsell or Aaron Boone, then I think you have problems. But as long as he has the buy-in, and this is true of really any sport, then I think we're golden. But just me, from a person who's, on my couch and, thinking somewhat critically about the Mariners, I just don't see how, if you're a 22-year-old kid, how you don't look around the league and think there are other managers who are at least a little more fun or seem like they care more. And again, this could be totally off base, but it's just the way Scott Servais carries himself, where I feel like if I was a 22-year-old trying to get excited about the Seattle Mariners and I saw this guy who's as vanilla as they come, I just don't know if it would have the desired effect that the Mariners are looking for.
So I think you also hit on a good thing there, where it it may not matter how Scott Service vibes with the big league club now, as long as he is establishing the right relationships with the young players. And it's a really weird situation to be in, where it's like you're managing for the future and maybe even players that aren't here with the big league club at the moment, while also just kind of like making sure that nothing blows up with the big league club and that everyone gets along. And that also may be a spot where it's fine to be just kind of like not fiery, not rocking the boat too much, but like I get the feeling that Scott Service is having to walk an interesting balance right now between players who are here but aren't really part of the future and players who are part of the future that aren't here yet. And you know, you may really start to see a little bit more as the plan comes into place. But also, to your point earlier, if it's not the right match and you wait 3, 4 years for it to pay off, then you're in trouble.
Totally. And again, like this goes back to the conversation about luck. Like finding a coach is a little luck based just in terms of timing because you have, you know, like if you're looking for coaches during an off season, you're limited to the ones who are available that off season, especially if you're the Mariners, where it's like seems like it'd be very hard for the Mariners to hire someone away from a job they already have, you know? Like no one's gonna leave a manager's job to then come manage the Mariners. So I think, I mean, I don't remember who else was available the off season that the Mariners got Scott Service, but I think he's fine. Like you said, like he's not someone that I would fire on the spot or anything. I just do start to worry about if he has that sort of ability to flip the switch, to use kind of a cliche, where it's like, okay, now like we're good, we're trying to actually do something that's, you know, that matters, that is big league based and big league based only. Like you don't have to manage the egos of the minor league kids who are trying to, you know, earn their spot. We're just winning games. I don't know what that's gonna look like with Scott Service at the helm. Basically, just because we've never seen it before. Like, we've seen him have a roster of like established big league players from, you know, 2016, 2018, or whatever, when they were trying to make it. But now to have that complete shift of putting so much of the well-being of the organization in his hand and having him sort of incubate all these kids, it does give me a little bit of pause. But we'll see. I mean, all you can do is just wait and see. So hopefully we're not having this conversation in 3 years. Like, is Scott Service the guy? Like, I hope we'll just know at some point.
That's also a good problem to have, though. If you're worried about the manager, that means a lot of things have panned out, and the manager is going to be a bigger factor than just like kind of just keeping the team alive and, you know, playing game to game. So that's a good problem to think about.
Yeah, that's true. I am kind of excited to have different problems. And also, that's why I'm excited for the hockey team to come to Seattle. Because, like, it's going to
Yes.
be so low stakes. And you can just, like, I'm excited to be mad about, like, the Seattle hockey team's line combinations for no reason, just because that's all there is to be mad about. Whereas with the Mariners, it seems, like, much bigger. You know, like, are they ever going to do it? Like, the questions carry much more weight when you have 18 years of missing the playoffs.
Yeah, it really does. And it's like one of those things where, you know, you mentioned the Browns earlier too. Like, it does start to weigh on you, where like, it's just how bad is this going to be for how long? And like, it really is to the point now where it's like a skill that you're this bad. It's hard to do over this sustained period. And, you know, I wonder if that does just weigh on you. And it feels like it just kind of weighs on everyone, where it's like, do you really, is this ever going to get better though?
Yeah, I think it's only natural to start to entertain those thoughts, which leads me to kind of our final question. We can end on this. This is sort of the ethos of the whole podcast. What is it that brings you back to the Mariners? Like, is it guilt essentially, where you're like, I have to just keep doing this because this is what I'm supposed to do? Like, at a certain point, it sort of transcends entertainment or even fandom, and it's just like a thing that you're, I don't want to say obligated, but it's close to that, where you're just doing it because you feel like you kind of have to. So, for you, what is the main thing that keeps you interested in the Seattle Mariners? Or I guess another way to frame it would be like, what would be your definition of like a good Mariners outcome? Is it just making the playoffs? Is it making the World Series? Winning the World Series? Like, what is it that keeps you like coming back to the Mariners?
So I think it for me it's less about on-field success, honestly, and this is like the cliched answer in some ways, but like it really is a lot about the community, whether it's online community or otherwise. Like it is, you can still find fun in it with the people around you, even if the team's bad. And so that could be, you know, BSing about the Mariners with neighbors or people who are around you day to day, or messing around on Twitter or online or on the site. And like the thing that actually does legitimately, you know, keep me and I think others coming back is not even necessarily the team or the games, but it's the people around it, which can make even a bad team entertaining. And I think for the Mariners itself, like if you're thinking about the team as a team, it's like the potential and the hope is what, when they're this bad, it's what keeps me, paying attention to games and tuning in at times and checking in on things. But the going through all of the bad, it really is the people in the community around it that still make the team entertaining, whether it's people that work for the team or fans or otherwise. Like, it's still a cool community thing, and that doesn't go away even when the team's bad.
Yeah, the real World Series is the friends we made along the way.
There we go. That's the measure of success.
Okay, well, thank you so much, Brian, for doing this. For anyone listening who wants to hear more of Brian or, get a peek
Why
into
would
his
you want
brain,
that?
you can find Brian on Twitter at Brian M. Floyd. I am at M. Robertson 22. Before you go, is there anything you would like to plug? Any final things to get off your chest? Any wild predictions about the Mariners? The floor is yours.
Subscribe to Banner Society or visit BannerSociety.com. We're on social platforms everywhere else. So that's our college football if you like college football. And what is a wild prediction for the Mariners? I think it'll work. World Series in 5 years. Within
Think that's
5 years.
pretty reasonable.
Yeah, it's not like a wild prediction really, but like, look, we got to buy into something, and we were presented with a plan and at least somewhat of a timeline. So screw it. We'll say it works.
Totally. And you have to sort of like speak it into existence at a certain point. Like, no one thought the Seahawks would win the Super Bowl until they won the Super Bowl. And now it's the expectation. So we just need the Mariners to figure out how to do that.
Fake it till you make it. It'll work.
Exactly. All right. Well, thank you again, Brian. We really appreciate it. For all the listeners, feel free to say nice things about us on the internet. Like and subscribe and rate us on iTunes and all that. And until next time, this has been the Lookout Landing Podcast, talking about why we are Mariners fans despite millions and millions of reasons not to. Thank you and goodbye.
While we're on the subject, could we change the subject now? I was knocking on your ears, don't believe you were always out. Looking towards the future, we were begging for the past. Well, we know we had the good things, but those never seem to last. Oh, please just last.